Today's title is The Invisible Things. Let's go to Genesis 1:1. Really good place to start. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Do we even think deeply into this verse? God created the heavens and the earth. Now, I'm not getting into the semantics of the God family, God the Father and Jesus Christ, and who did what. But it was created. Job, somehow he knew the earth hangs on nothing, because that's one of the things he said. It's not on the back of a turtle with water spilling off the flat earth. It's not on Atlas' shoulder. It says the earth hangs on nothing. So we're going to go to Psalm 104:19. Psalm 104, just for a scripture. And then we're going to spend quite a bit of time in another section. Psalm 104:19. He appointed the moon for seasons, and the sun knows it's going down. And when you dig into this, he appointed. That means he fixed a time or a season. It has to do with the festival. And it's a signal. And to fix upon it, to meet at a stated time, to summon or to direct. So the moon has many functions, but one of the functions he set up when this was all created was a signal for us to know when to go to the feast. Basically, he set up the moon for summoning us to the festivals, and it was set up for so much more. Verse 2, Psalm 104:2. Who covered himself with light as with a garment, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain. In the ancient times, their houses were set up like a cubicle with a courtyard in the middle. And they had what they called a curtain. For us, a curtain is on a window and we draw it open or shut depending on if we want light in the room. But they had a curtain that they pulled over the top, like we would say would be a tent top. He stretched out the stars like a curtain. So you can look up and you can see that they're stretched out all over the place. And Isaiah says the same thing, that he stretched out the heavens like a curtain. In Psalm 147, we won't go there, but he says, he calls the stars by their name. And with our Hubble and other space or telescopes, we're able to look way into the universe. We haven't found the end of it yet, and we don't know where we are within this universe. We haven't found the end yet, and we're finding billions and billions of galaxies with millions and billions of stars in the galaxies. He says, I know them all by name. What a mind. He knows them by name. Let's go to Isaiah 40. He stretched them out like a curtain. Isaiah 40, verse 12. We've got a few scriptures to get started, and then we'll stay in one place for a little bit. Isaiah 40, verse 12. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand and meted out heaven with the span and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance. What I'm going to concentrate on is that he meted out the heavens with a span. And when I looked this up and studied it a little bit, they're talking about the span of the hand. Okay, so a universe that we cannot find the end of, with all the billions and billions of galaxies, he says, I measured that with my hand. So then a question that comes to my mind, if I'm measuring something with my hand, where's the rest of me? God's kingdom His heavens are something we cannot comprehend. And they're invisible to us because we haven't yet seen past the physical universe he created. So his heavens are out there someplace. And wherever he was, he could measure what he created with his hand. And in chapter 48, verse 13, it says, his right hand spanned the heavens. And in Timothy, we're told about the King Eternal, immortal, invisible. So he's talking about God being invisible. We can't see him. But he also gives us a clue. Let's go to Romans 1. We'll spend a little time here. Romans 1, verse 20. Romans 1, verse 20. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. And another translation says, so that they may be without excuse. In other words, you have no excuse for this. But it says the invisible things are clearly seen. How can you see invisible things? Well, we're going to go into that. My goal is to have us leave here with a greater sense of awe, fear, and respect towards our Creator by understanding more of what went into He created the heavens and the earth. So we're going to start with the heavens. Think of what he created when he created the heavens. This earth we're on, it's the exact right size for life. It's in the exact right zone around the sun so that we can live. The sun is the exact right size. If it was too much bigger, it would cook the earth. If it was too much smaller, it'd be so cold that we couldn't live. We've got the right temperature. If you took any of this and took it off just even a little bit, there wouldn't be life on earth as we know it. And it's a balancing act. Remember your early years of school with science when they put a ball on the end of a string and had you swing it around? And they taught you about the centrifugal pull with that? And the faster you swing, the more the ball wants to pull out, or if you make the string longer, the ball wants to pull out even more. This is way back in ancient days for me of science, like second or third grade. Well, just think, the earth is not on a string. We are going around the sun. So he made this incredible balancing act of gravitational pull, and yet the centrifugal force of the earth going around. Very balanced act. And he did that with the sun, the earth, the moon, and in fact, the galaxies that are out there. Some of those galaxies are spiraling around. Okay, so one of the things it says he created light. What does light encompass? Well, you have the light that you can see, the light waves. Then there are radio waves that are a part of light. And then to make the light for the sun and the stars, you have the laws of thermodynamics. What does it take to make this body actually burn and make light? He had to create those laws, the thermodynamics that it takes to light the stars. So when you think about, and God created the heavens and the earth, he had to create all the physical laws that it took to make the physical earth, the physical universe, work. He created all these, and the best minds we have on earth working on trying to study these things can't figure out how does this work. But he created it. And within this, there are the laws of physics, mathematics, geometry, and chemistry, just to name a few. Well, we got to the heavenly. Let's go through the earthly. And for that, we're going to Romans 1. Well, we're still in Romans 1, but we're going to go to verse 18. Romans 1:18. He's talking about people who are kind of rejecting him. But he says, Romans 1:18, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it unto them." If you manifest something, it means you reveal it. You make it something that is apparent. And there's quite a bit in here. Verse 19, "Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it unto them." Verse 20, "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen." Okay, but if it's invisible, how do you clearly see it? "Being understood by the things that are made." There's the key. The things that he made, you look at those and you understand the invisible things of God. "Even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." Well, I looked up the power, and it means a force. But when you dig deeper into it, it means a miraculous power. And Godhead means divinity, a deity, a supreme divinity. And when you put these together, it means a God of miraculous power. And when we look at creation, we can kind of understand that. The Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown commentary said, "Two things are thus said to be clearly discovered to the reflecting intelligence." In other words, you need to take some time to look at this. "By the things which are made. One, that there is an eternal power." This is something that it's more than just a temporary thing. "And two, that it is neither a blind physical force nor a pantheistic spirit of nature, but a living, conscious, divine person whose outgoing energy is beheld by the external universe." In other words, what this commentator was saying is, if you take time to look at anything in God's creation, you understand this is something much more than man can even think of and do. And that is why people of all races, genders, economic conditions, and education have looked at the world around them and recognized that there must be a higher power, and so they made idols out of things in creation that were brighter, stronger, faster, or smarter than ourselves. So physical people, no matter where they are in the world, can understand there's something greater than myself. And it seems there is something in us that we want to worship, something that is greater than ourselves, so they make idols. Lightning, thunder, sun, moon, stars, animals, rocks, forces of nature are all worshiped, because man recognizes these things are greater than themselves. Verse 21, "Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened." People, for all their wanting to worship something, seem to refuse to be subject to God. And yet, we will subject to ourselves to his creation by creating idols out of what he has created. Fortunately, we know who created all of this, so we know who to worship. So let's try to understand a little more of the awesomeness of our Creator through the seeing or the understanding of just a few of the invisible things that are around us. And we have many. I'm just going to go through a little bitty list today. Gravity. We can't see gravity. Now, we know gravity works, and it works every time. There are things that will overcome gravity. We have rockets that send spaceships out and all that. They can overcome gravity, but gravity always works, and it's invisible. We cannot see where gravity comes from. We cannot see what it took to create it. But it's one of the invisible things he created. It holds everything together. Gravity works from the smallest atom to the largest galaxy in the universe. Gravity is there. And he created it. So look, what about migration? This just fascinates me. We have various animals, birds, insects that migrate. You know, we have our geese that go from south part of the country all the way up into Canada, and then they come back. We have many, many things that migrate. How do they know when they're supposed to migrate? How do they know where they're supposed to go? Why is it if they're in South Texas, they know they need to go to Canada, they don't go to California? They know where to go. How is that? That's an invisible thing that he created. And on the fifth day, he created creeping things, fowls, every living creature that moves. And this is just a part of it. The migration, the understanding to migrate. Fish, whales, and other sea life also migrate. You have salmon. They're upstream in Canada or Washington State or Alaska, and they lay their eggs. Those salmon that hatch go down the stream, into the river, into the ocean, and spend almost their whole life in the ocean. You know what happens? When it's time, they find that same river and go up to the same stream and lay their eggs in the same spot, if possible. How do they know this? And God created the heavens and the earth. Butterflies. I'm just going to spend some time on migration. San Juan Capistrano, California. There are butterflies that come through there almost to the day every year. And if for some reason they don't make it on that day, it makes the news. It is that consistent. My brother has some government prairie acres up in South Dakota. They're land that they've taken out of farming and let it go back to the native prairie. And one of the things he has done with his is plant milkweeds. Why milkweeds? To us, we walked the cornfield and we pulled the milkweeds. But he planted them because butterflies from South America come through on their way to Canada, and they live on milkweed. They lay their eggs on milkweed. And I was talking to my sister-in-law. I says, it's just amazing that these butterflies know where to go and when to go. And she says, something more amazing than that. The butterflies that start out die along the way. They lay their eggs. The hatchlings fly until they lay eggs and die. So it can be as many as seven generations from when they started till they get to Canada. Well, how do these new generations know how to get there? They didn't leave them a map. How do they know? How do they know that they're supposed to go north, not east or west? And God created. It's an invisible thing, so we can understand. Honeybees. Not going to talk about migration here. Honeybees have the brain the size of a small seed. And yet honeybees know geometry, physics, chemistry, and navigation. Do you understand that? They know all of those things with a brain that is just minuscule compared to ours. And we have to learn these things. Physics. Well, now I'm going to go geometry first. Geometry, they know for some reason, and I think you know the reason, that if you make a six-sided cone, honeycomb, it's the very most efficient use of space you can have, and strong. So that's the physics part of it, or the geometry part. The physics is they build this cone or honeycomb so it comes out at an angle. Why the angle? Well, they can fill it with honey and it doesn't fall out. And then they can cap it off. The chemistry. What a wonderful chemistry degree they have. They take various pollens and nectars and water, and they make beeswax for making these honeycombs. They make nectar for feeding the queen. She gets a specific mixture of the nectar and what they create for her. The workers get a specific mixture. They have some of their own, but they make different mixtures for whatever the need is. They don't teach that in B school. They just know it. The invisible instincts that we can see are wonderfully displayed. And it was created into them. The navigation. This one just fascinates me. Bees from their hive will fly like 1.5 to 3 miles average to gather for their nest, or for the hive. And they collect the pollen and the nectar and the water, and sometimes they go as far as 8.5 miles. Well, they are zigging and zagging from plant to plant and getting what they need. And when they get full and they're loaded down, they make a beeline. You've heard of a beeline. There's a reason why I said that, because no matter where they are, they go straight back to the hive. Now, they'll go around obstacles, of course, but they go straight back to the hive, no matter where they are out in the field. Something that's even fascinating more than that is a beekeeper, and they do this commonly, will load all the hives up on a truck and move them as much as 1,000 miles. Well, then when he has set the hives in place and he takes the screen off so that they can get out, the next morning when they get up, it's like, okay, you are here. And this X gets put on their brain, so to speak. You are here. And they'll go out wherever they're going to go and collect and come back to here. Mr. Pierce has raised bees a lot, and he told me one time, because I needed to move a hive, he says you need to move it just a very few feet at a time, because that X says you are here, and if you move that hive 50 feet, the bees will come back to here. Now, they may find the hive, but they come back to here. They don't come back to the hive. So that's why you want the hive to stay put. How do they know that? It's because he created the heavens and the earth, and this invisible instinct that the bees have show us his mind. And God created the creeping things, the things that swarm like bees. And he didn't just create the bee. He created everything the bee knows to do. The invisible instincts that we see manifested in the bees, he created all that at the same time. People all over the world have been made aware that something greater than themselves has worked these things out. So they made idols. Sometimes even of our own mind. We make an idol of our own mind. This is a funny story. I was sitting there eating my noon meal, listening to the radio, and they had this article about the natural world. And this person came on and said, at one point in the millennia past, fish had the wrong shape for swimming. It just made it really hard to swim. And this is a paraphrase because I don't have the transcript. Nature knew she had a problem and started working to change the shape of the fish so the fish could swim better. If you cannot acknowledge God, I guess you'll come up with something like that. I guess that's why we have Mother Nature rather than Father God. So how would a fish know that it needed to change anything? Well, this person knew that there had to be a power or force to acknowledge the need for a change and to make it, even if it took eons of time, by evolution. So we understand all over the world that there's something greater than ourselves. And God says, I'm going to let you know about me. And it's through the invisible things that are around you. Verse 22, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Nature knew she. There had to be this force, this power that was in control of everything. But it surely couldn't be God. It had to be something else. So when we get to thinking like that, we actually do become fools. We reject God. We reject the knowledge, the understanding of God. So in my mind, with all the thought God put into this temporary physical creation, how much more do you think he put into the eternal creation? Something that is going to be around for eternity? Something that will never end? And the kingdom of God is invisible to us now, except for in a vision if he chooses it. And he does give us a type of a vision through his scriptures. Jacob had a vision of God's kingdom. Ezekiel did. And we know John did when he wrote the book of Revelation and peered into heavens. We know that Stephen had a little view of it when he said, I see God the Father and Jesus Christ standing next to him. So there are these visions of the kingdom. But he's telling us, it's invisible to you, but I'm going to show you how you can have a little bit of vision of it through the invisible things. So what are some of the invisible things of the kingdom that are manifest in us, even though we are physical? Well, the invisible things are shown by action, kind of like gravity. If I drop this, that action shows you that gravity is still working. Okay? The first one is going to be love. Love God and love your neighbor. Now, for me, I have never had a definition of love. People have described what love does, but I've never really had a suitable definition. Love is this, other than God is love. And then we understand that love through his actions. You know, he gave his only begotten son to be our savior. He wants us to be a part of his family. And he forgives us our iniquities, all those. Those show the action of love. But as far as love itself, I've never had a bona fide description of love or definition of love. There is no love meter. You can't go around and say, okay, let's see, there's a lot of love here. There's a little love there. Is there any love there? You know, we don't have that. Love is shown by action. And when we have people who love us, we understand love because of their actions. It says it will be a kingdom of love. And we understand God is love. That's two places in 1 John 4. And he comes down to you love God and you love your neighbor. But those are invisible things. Love is invisible. The only reason we know that love is through the actions that people take. Joy is another one. He says there is joy over a sinner that repents. And I'm always struck by John 15, when Jesus is on his way to the worst day of his life, and he says, "My joy, I give you joy that my joy might remain in you and that your joy might be full." And this was on his way to the worst day of his life. And he still had joy. But you don't measure joy. There is no visible thing that tells you joy other than the actions. That's an invisible thing, but we understand it by the actions. And in Matthew, we're told about enter into the joy of your Lord. Because God has joy. He has joy in many, many ways. And especially when a sinner repents, he says there's joy in heaven. Well, that includes him. And it includes his son, Jesus Christ. I'm going to also cover eternal. Eternal is invisible. We don't understand eternal. We can kind of understand eternal in the future, but we can't understand eternal in the past. It's like Mr. Trabig has said, okay, what was God's first thought? Well, what was before then? Well, you can't really go there. This is something that we do not understand, but he gives us clues about it. Talks about his eternal, his power and his Godhead. We're told in Isaiah that God inhabits eternity. In other words, that's just, it's sort of like the I am. It's not I was, I will, or I have been. It's the I am means it's just the way it is. Well, it says he inhabits eternity. Not like, well, I started inhabiting eternity when we got the house built. No, it's God inhabits eternity. How do we see that in action? Let's go to Ecclesiastes 3, verse 11. Ecclesiastes 3:11. This is right after that song that talks about a time for this and a time for that. Talking about temporary things, it's a time for temporary things. But verse 11 is a continuation of this. He says, "He has made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God makes from the beginning to the end." And when you dig into that, he has set the world in their heart. Another meaning of that, which is very valid, is he has set eternity in their heart. Okay, how does that work? Eternity is something that's invisible, but how do you see eternity in action? It's because people want to live. You know, of course, there are times when pain or sickness or something like that, you just really want to give up and put it all away from you. But in most circumstances, people want to live. and I want one more day, and after that I want another day, and another day, and another day. That's the eternity in our hearts. We don't want to stop living. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown again says, it is man's privilege to discern something eternal behind the fleeting present world and to cling to it. That's something eternal, and you cling to that. Because, again, we want to live another day and another day. More and more, just keep going. We don't want it to stop. That is eternity in our hearts. And part of this is just part of God's spiritual laws, his law of love, his joy, and there are many spiritual laws that I'm not going to get into. We just don't have the time. But God's spiritual laws were in place before all of this creation. Before he created the heavens and the earth, there was spiritual law. How do we know that? That's very simple. He talks about Satan and that he was perfect until iniquity was found in him. How would you know that it's iniquity if you didn't have a law that told you that it was iniquity? So he had spiritual laws before he even created the heavens and the earth. Laws that are going to be here more. Forever. Like the law of love. If you love your God with all your being and your neighbor as yourself, you're obeying his law. An eternal law. A law of love that means there's not going to be anything that destroys in his kingdom because of the law of love. That's an invisible thing, but we can see it. We can understand that. But his spiritual laws were in place before the physical was even created, with all the laws that are in the physical creation and all the instincts that we talked about so far. His spiritual laws were there. They will continue. And it behooves us to study what those spiritual laws are and to obey them. Because that is a part of what eternity is, the eternity that's in our hearts. So what does all this mean? Let's go to Micah 6. All I have to do is go the right direction and I'll eventually find it. Micah 6, verse 8. He's talking to his people there. He says, he has showed you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? But to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Isn't that what he requires of us? Got another little story. A group of scientists came before God and says, God, you're no longer relevant. You're no longer needed. We can do anything you can do, and you can just go someplace and just don't bother us. We're doing just fine. Says, we can take dirt and make man. Oh, that's interesting. Show me. You know, give me a demonstration. Okay, so those scientists get together and they get their concoctions together. And one of them reaches down to get a handful of dirt. And God says, oh, no. That's not the way this works. You need to go create your own dirt. Because we do not walk humbly before our God. We think we can do things without him. We're just fine. God, stay out of my business. But everything we work with, even the ability to have the imaginations of our mind or our heart, that was all created by God. from nothing by a word. So today we covered gravity, migration, bees and their abilities, butterflies and other things. Other things that are manifestations of the invisible things of God. And yet man cannot get it. Let's go to Isaiah 44 and show that man cannot get it. And he pretty well sums it up here. Isaiah 44, verse 9. He's talking about idolatry. Isaiah 44, 9. They that make a graven image are all of them vanity, and their delectable things shall not profit, and they are their own witnesses. They see not, nor know, that they may be ashamed. They don't know that they should be ashamed. Who has formed a god or a molten or graven image that is profitable for nothing? Behold, all of his fellows shall be ashamed, and the workmen, they are of men. Let them all be gathered together. Let them stand up. Yet they shall fear, and they shall be ashamed together. Why is this? Why will they be ashamed together? Verse 12, the smith with the tongs both works in the coals and fashions it with hammers and works it with the strength of his arms. Yes, he is hungry, and his strength fails. He drinks no water, and he's faint. The carpenter stretches out his rule. He marks it out with a line. He fits it with planes and marks it out with the compass and makes it after the figure of a man, according to the beauty of a man. Wow, this is a really good-looking idol. According to the beauty of the man, that it may remain in the house. He hews him down cedars and takes the cypress and the oak, which he strengthens for himself among the trees of the forest. He plants an ash and the rain does nourish it. Then shall it be for a man to burn. For he will take thereof and he'll warm himself. Yes, he kindles it and he bakes bread. Yes, he makes a god and worships it. He makes a graven image and he falls down before it. So verse 16, he burns part of it in the fire, with part of it he eats flesh, he roasts the roast and is satisfied, he warms himself, and he says, aha, I am warm, I have seen the fire. And what's left over, the residue, he makes a god. Even his graven image, he falls down unto it, and worships it, and prays unto it, and says, deliver me, for you are my God. They have not known nor understood, for he has shut their eyes that they cannot see, and their hearts that they cannot understand. And none considers in his heart, neither is there knowledge nor understanding to say, now wait a minute here. I burned part of it in the fire. I've also baked bread upon the coals of it. I've roasted flesh, and I've eaten it, and I made the residue an abomination? Shall I fall down to the stock of a tree? He feeds on ashes. A deceived heart has turned him aside that he cannot deliver his soul, nor say, is there not a lie in my right hand? In other words, I used my right hand to create this idol, this molten image, or this wooden thing. My hand has created a lie. This idol is nothing but a lie. Let's go back to Isaiah 1. That just shows how foolish we can be. We'll cut down a tree and use it for all kinds of purposes, but yet then you bow down and worship. Isaiah 1, verse 2. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they've rebelled against me. The ox knows his owner, and the donkey his master's crib, but Israel does not know. My people do not consider. He has given us invisible things to show us who he is, what his mind is like. He's given us these things. And he says, I made them so that you can understand. We take an ox or a calf and we have it in the stall and we turn it out and let it graze all day long. It knows where to come back to. And yet God gives us understanding of his way. And sometimes we just don't go and observe what he tells us. We don't obey him. But he says, even the animals know who their master is. You are my people. You should know who I am. And we're going to close in Romans 1. We've already been here. Romans 1, verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. And because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, taking a tree and using it for all kinds of purposes and then bowing down before it. That's one way. And changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made unto corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature, or creation, creation, more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. I'm so thankful that he has given us his Holy Spirit to understand, which is another invisible thing that you cannot measure, but it's displayed by action, so that we can understand some of the mind of God and worship him with awe and wonder. When we look around creation, it's just awesome what he has done. And I just covered a little bitty part of it. He has manifested himself. How has he done that? He's given us things that we can clearly see when we look for them. But we need to look. And what do we look for? Things that tell us about God, the invisible things.